Samanta Chakkavalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sadhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakha Mokadang Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanda Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanda Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanda Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Having given 2 days talk in Chinese, now I almost forgot I have to give English talk today. Okay, so today my talk is Move in Your Own Resort. People may wonder, what does it mean? I tell a story first. In certain forest, they live a lot of monkeys. And one day, a hunter set out a trap of pitch in order to catch monkey. And this hunter put delicious fragrant food and covered with pitch. Pitch is like tar, very sticky, black, sticky things. So he covered the food with the pitch and set out a trap. And the monkeys, who are clever and not greedy, they try to avoid this trap from far. But there was a monkey who was very foolish and very greedy, unable to withstand the frequent smell of that food approach that pitch. And in order to get that food, he stretched one of his hand and grabs the food, what he think is food, but the pitch, his hand gets stuck in the pitch. And he thought, I have to free my hand. So in order to free his hand, he stretched the other hand. And now both hands are caught, are stuck in the pitch, and both hands are caught. And this monkey, because he is foolish, unable to learn the lesson, he thought, I have to free both my hands with my leg. So he stretched out one of his legs, and now 3 points are caught. And he continued to stretch the other leg, and now 4 points are caught. Up to this level, he still does not learn from the lesson. And he said that I have to free both of my hand and my feet by applying my muscle, nose, my muscle. So he applied his muscle, then he get caught again. So now 5 points are caught. And the hunter came out. And hunter can do what he want to do toward this monkey. So why the monkey suffer the calamity? Why the monkey suffer the disaster? Buddha said, because he strayed out his own domain, his own resort, and stepped into other people's domain. Similarly, we as a practitioner, if we stray out our resort and step into other people's domain, we also will meet with calamity, disaster, like the monkey. So what is other people's domain? Buddha said in Sanyutta Nikaya, the sight, the visible object, that is the visible object cognizable by the eyes, that is lovely, agreeable, pleasing, and sensually enticing, like the beautiful sight of men or and a man or women, opposite the beautiful sight of opposite sex, the show, movie, TV program, or all the jewelry, anything, any sight or any visible objects that can arouse your lust is called other people's domain. If our mind step or our eyes step into all this sensually enticing visible object, then we will be like the monkey, get caught at one point first, and unable to learn the lesson, we will get caught by another point, the point of ear. Anything, any sound that is lovely, pleasing, sensually enticing, agreeable, like the praise from other people, the sweet voice from different or from opposite sex, the music, classical music or modern music like rock and roll, and so on. If we get attracted, attracted by this sensually enticing sound, and we also will be caught because the mind has stepped into other people's domain. Similarly, the fragrance, any fragrance, any smell that is agreeable, pleasing, sensually enticing, is considered other people's domain, not our domain. Any taste, any delicious taste that is agreeable, sensually enticing, lovely, pleasing, is also considered the domain of others. And if we step out, if we stray outside our own resort and step into this pleasing and sensually enticing taste, then we will be like the monkey, get caught. Now, 4 points. And last one, the tangible. The tangible, the soft touch, the touch of beloved one, the touch of material things that you wear on the body, and the soft touch on the bed, and so on. All these are called, all this can easily arouse our fantasy. We can think when we have all this soft touch, the mind goes wild, goes with greed. So Buddha said, pleasing sight, sound, smell, taste, and tangible, all these are the domain of others. If we cannot, if we do not control ourselves and step into other people's domain, then we will meet with calamity and the mara. The mara of defilements will catch us, then we will meet with abundance of suffering. Therefore, Buddha said, don't stray out your own resort. Then, what is our own resort? The four foundations of mindfulness. We should stay in our own resort. The four foundations of mindfulness: contemplation on body, contemplation of feeling, contemplation of mind, and contemplation of Dhamma. Satipatthana. These four aspects, four objects, body, feeling, mind, and Dhamma, are the objects for us to establish, to develop mindfulness. Are the objects for us to focus our mind. Because the mind need an object to focus. If there's no object to focus, then the mind will step into other people's domain. And this body, feeling, mind, and Dhamma are inside ourselves. Therefore, keep your attention inside yourself. So first, we keep attention in our body first. So when we focus our attention on the body, what we see, we see different sensations. Different sensations that arise from the body, like cold, heat, vibration, itchiness, heaviness, stiffness, then tightness, hardness, roughness, pushing, and so on. So we see different sensations that arise in the body the moment you pay attention to your body. And all this sensation are under the category of four elements. Heat and cold is a fire element. Vibration, pushing are wind element. Tightness, cohesion, flowing are water element. And last one, Patawi Apo Tejo, wind element. Pushing, vibration, wind element. And the last one is what? Earth element. Hardness, roughness, heaviness, lightness, so on are earth element. So the moment you pay attention to the body, you can see these four elements arising, changing, passing away, arising, changing, passing away. When we repeatedly see the four elements in the body again and again, then gradually we remove the perception of body as self. We remove the wrong perception that body is a self. Because what you see is only four elements. Earth element, water, fire, wind element, again and again. Then slowly you understand body composed of four elements only. And these four elements are not a permanent self, are not an abiding self. You have no control over the change of the four elements. Therefore, The body contemplation helps you to develop the wisdom to see through body is not a permanent self. This is your own resort. And we not only see the impersonal nature of the body, we also see the body is impure. The body from top of the head down to the soul, from the soul go up to the head, encased with skin full of impurities, like head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. Then flesh, sinew, bone marrow, kidney, heart, liver, membrane, spleen, lung, intestine, mesentery, gut, feces, and brain. Then pus, sweat, blood, grease, phlegm, saliva, up to the last one, urine. So if we can see, this body, see inside the skin. See inside the skin, the body is full of impurity. If you can see by one by one, all this organ, from the from external head hair, start from head hair up to the last one, urine. If we can pay attention to the impurity of the body again and again, then we lose the perception of beauty of the body. Not only we lose the perception of beauty of the body, then we also lose the attachment to the body. Now we love our body so much because we think it's very beautiful, it's very useful, we can use the body for enjoyment. But when you see the body is impersonal by discerning the four elements and seeing the body is impure by discerning the 32 parts, then we slowly get rid of the perception of self and perception of beauty with in regard with the body. Not only that, we also see external body, our beloved one's body, our parents' body, our sons and daughters' body, they are also same impersonal nature and consist of a heap of impurity. So we remove the attachment to our own body as well as attachment to opposite sex. So if we can pay attention to our body repeatedly, we are staying in our own resort. Our mind does not go out our own resort and step into other people's domain. So this first one, contemplation on body. But contemplation on body alone is not enough. We need to contemplation on feeling. Contemplation on feelings is extremely important. Why? Because Buddha say in dependent origination, dependent on feeling, craving arises. Pleasant feeling activates craving. And we all know craving is the origin of all suffering. Craving is the root cause that extend the cycle of round, the cycle of birth and death. Why is it so? Why craving responsible for extending the cycle of birth and death? When our mind is beset by craving, either craving for opposite sex, or craving for a sweet sound, or craving for fragrant or taste or tangible. When the mind is beset by craving, the mind becomes very agitated. When this craving is unfulfilled, the mind becomes so agitated. The craving want to get something. So this craving will develop up to intense craving. We call clinging. Therefore, Buddha say, dependent on craving, clinging. And when a craving becomes so intense, then you cannot live without this craving fulfilled, then what will you do? What will you do? You will do something to satiate, to fulfill your craving. Am I right? Yeah. This doing something is called karma in the teaching of Buddha. Karma, or called kamma. Kamma. So in order to satiate, to fulfill the craving, we do act. We act something. This action, verbally, either verbally or physically, are called karma. And we also understand, once the karma is performed, it leaves behind karmic tendency. It leaves behind karmic tendency. And this karmic tendency, when met with favorable conditions, it will sprout. Just like you throw a seed onto the ground. When the seed meet with sunlight, water, and fertile soil and so on, then the seed will sprout into a small tree and keep on growing. Similarly, the karmic potency, when meet with favorable condition, it will produce its result. What is the result? Birth. Birth. When there is birth, there is aging, sickness, and death. When there is birth again, then the mind will be beset with craving again. When the six sense bases meet with six sense agreeable object, then craving again. And when craving again, we act again to fulfill the craving. And this action again will pave the way to cycle of birth and death. There's no end to it. Therefore, if we want to cut short the round of rebirth, we have to contemplate healing, especially pleasant healing, because pleasant healing activate craving, the source, the origin of all suffering. So whenever craving pleasant feeling arises, when the mind, they say, when the eye sees with beautiful opposite sex, then very pleasant feeling arises. And if a person does not know how to contemplate his own feeling, but he chases after that beautiful opposite sex, then he is called a person stray out his own domain and step into other people's domain. And he will be caught there. He will be caught by that beautiful opposite sex. Therefore, a good practitioner knows he will immediately, when there's a pleasant feeling, he will immediately aware of it. When there's pleasant feeling, the moment you aware of it, and the force or the momentum or the degree of that pleasant feeling will slow down or will cool down. If you are not aware of it, If you are not aware of pleasant feeling, then the pleasant feeling immediately activate the craving. But the moment you're aware of that pleasant feeling, then the force, the degree, cool down. When it cools down, you will not react compulsively. You will not react so fast, owing to pleasant feeling. And pleasant feeling is very obvious in our mind. Whether it's pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling is so obvious. The moment it's there, we know it. But how many people can aware of it? Although we know, but we cannot aware of it. Most people chase after that pleasant feeling because pleasant feeling is so pleasant. We want to enjoy that pleasant feeling. Like a man have opposite, have sexual relation with a woman. Why? Because he wants that pleasant feeling. He wants that excitement that causes a lot of pleasant feeling in him. So very few people can withstand the enticement of pleasant feeling. Because of this, when pleasant feeling arises in us, we almost forget to be aware of it. And when we are not aware of it, then we will follow pleasant feeling to fulfill the pleasant pleasant feeling will activate the craving, and to fulfill the craving, we will perform unwholesome karma. Similarly, when unpleasant feeling arises in us, we also must be aware of it. If we are not aware of it, unpleasant feeling will activate anger. And when there's anger, we do not know how to handle with the anger, then we will react according to the anger and we will perform unwholesome karma again and again. All this unwholesome karma will leave behind unwholesome energy that will prolong the cycle of rebirth. Therefore, when there's unpleasant feeling, you must learn how to be aware of it. Just know, unpleasant feeling has arisen in me. No, unpleasant feeling has arisen in me. Or pleasant feeling has arisen in me. Pleasant feeling has arisen in me. The moment you have that mindfulness, we call mindfulness of feeling, and that feeling lose its momentum, lose its power, then you will not react so fast. And that mindfulness also give chance to wisdom to arise, to know that pleasant feeling will pass away. That pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling will subside. If you act so fast, act so compulsively towards the pleasant feeling, then you have no chance to see the impermanence of that pleasant feeling. Therefore, when you have mindfulness, you hold that pleasant feeling, you freeze it. Freeze it. This freezing, the moment you freeze it, then wisdom has the chance to penetrate. This pleasant feeling is impermanent. So after you are aware of it, if possible, mentally note it as impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. Note that pleasant feeling as impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. If you do not do in this way, then for most beings, that pleasant feeling will condition craving, and unpleasant feeling will condition anger. Then we will act accordingly. Then the suffering will follow us endlessly. Therefore, contemplation on feeling is also very important for us to sever the craving. And it's very clear. It's very clear and very easy to observe when there is pleasant feeling or when there is unpleasant feeling. However, because for a long, long time, we indulge, we delight in the pleasant feeling. That delighting in the pleasant feeling makes us forget to be mindful of it. Okay. If we fail to contemplate feeling, then it becomes craving, then it's still okay, because we can move from contemplation of feeling towards the contemplation on the mind. Craving is a state of mind, right? So if we fail to contemplate feeling, now we can contemplate the mind. Craving. How should we contemplate? How to contemplate? We contemplate the mind as a mind, the mind affected by greed, or a mind affected by craving, as a mind affected by craving. This is very important. If you contemplate my craving, then the craving will never cease. You must see craving is a state of mind. It's not yours. It's a state of mind that arises due to certain causes. So you can investigate what are the causes of the arising of that craving. It should be, the cause is unwise attention, ayoniso manasikara. Because you pay attention, let's say the opposite sex, you have lust toward the opposite sex. Because you pay attention to the beauty of that opposite sex, therefore that your lust is aroused. But if you can pay attention to the impure of that opposite sex, because previously we have said we contemplate the impurity of the body, we learn this technique already, then now you can use that contemplation of the impure of the body to apply when you see the opposite sex. So if you can apply it, then this is called wise attention. When you can apply the impurity into the opposite sex, then how can the lust be aroused? The lust cannot be aroused when you see the body as impure. Therefore, owing to unwise attention, then the lust is aroused. This is the cause. So you investigate the cause and the effect. The effect is a mind affected by lust, as a mind affected by lust. Not my mind. A mind affected by lust is a state of mind. Similarly, when this lust is unfulfilled, then the mind becomes very agitated, like a fish taken out from the pond and put on a dry land, struggling, jumping here and there, because the desire to live in the water is not fulfilled anymore. So when the lust is not fulfilled, the mind becomes agitated. And this time, and if you are mindful enough, you should contemplate a mind affected by anger, or a mind affected by agitation, as a mind affected by agitation. This is called contemplation of mind. If the mind is agitated, then you do not aware of it. Then of course you will speak harsh word, or you will scold somebody, or you want to beat somebody. Because the mind is so agitated, you want to release your anger by acting. This acting is called akusala karma, unwholesome karma. Therefore, not aware, unable to aware your own state of mind, then we are sure to perform unwholesome karma that harms ourselves as well as other people. Buddha's teaching is very easy. Buddha say, avoid evil. Avoid evil mean avoid anger, avoid harming other people. Then do good. Do good mean cultivate wholesome state of mind. Loving kindness, compassion, don't harm other people. Then purify your mind. How to purify your mind? By directly knowing what's happening in your mind, by arousing, by developing mindfulness and wisdom to see all states of mind are impermanent, are conditionally produced, are impersonal, are suffering. All state of mind, whenever it arises, is suffering. So if you can observe, if you can be mindful, if you can apply wisdom in this way, and all this unwholesome mental state stop at mental level only. It will not be transformed into bodily action. It will not be transformed into verbally action. Then you will not harm anyone in this world, including yourself. Therefore, how important is to be aware of our own state of mind so that all the unwholesome karma can be avoided. However, it's so difficult to be aware of our own mind. Why? The mind follow you. Now they say, now if you are 50 years old, the mind has been following you for 50 years already, and yet we still cannot control it. For 50 years, what are we doing? Never control our mind, never aware of our mind. This is nature, because Buddha said, for a long, long, long time, we have identified our mind, our mental state as myself. We see our mental state, whatever mental state that arises in our mind, craving, anger, jealousy, happiness, sorrow, competition, loving kindness, compassion, wisdom, and so on. Whatever mental state that arises in our mind, we immediately identify them as myself, my own mind, myself. Therefore, it becomes so difficult to be aware of it, because we grasp all mental state as myself. Once you grasp it wrongly, you are unable to arouse the wisdom to penetrate into it as non-self. Okay. So we must practice mindfulness and wisdom. Whether you are practicing contemplation of body or feelings or mind, we have to apply these important mental factors. These two important mental factors. One is mindfulness, Mindfulness, what does it mean? Mindfulness means purely observe, merely observe without react. Whatever arises in you, any sensation from the body or feeling or mental state from the mind, you purely observe it without any reaction. See it as like another person see other people, the things not belong to themselves, not belong to himself. See like the third party. So all this sensation or feeling or mental state that arise, we just see it like a third party, not belong to ourselves. This is called mindfulness. If you see it as mine, oh my pleasant feeling, oh my mental state, then we will immediately react to it. Any reaction is called karma, whether it's mental karma, physical karma, or verbal karma. So when the moment you are mindful of it, then you will not react. When you do not react to it, you give time. You give time for that mental state to arise and pass away. If you immediately react to it, then that means before that mental state passes away, before that mental state passes away, you already react, so you have no chance to see the impermanence of that mental state. Therefore, we often say, mindfulness gives wisdom and opportunity to know all things are impermanent. If the mental state does not subside, does not pass away, if you do not see that mental state or feeling pass away, then mentally you should note impermanent. For some people, they just observe, then they can see it passes away. But for some people, owing to the weakness of mindfulness, they cannot see the mental state passes away. Therefore, he have to apply wisdom by contemplating impermanent. Mentally say, impermanent, anicca, changing, subsiding, and so on. When you tell like that, when you mentally note like that, then you will not react anymore. And also, when you mentally note like that, then you harmonize your contemplation with the fact, with the truth that Buddha said, all formations are impermanent. When the way of your contemplation harmonize or synchronize with the truth, then the truth will reveal itself vividly. Then the impermanent, which is the truth, will manifest itself very fast. Okay, so this is how we can apply mindfulness and wisdom to contemplate our feeling and mind. Now we come to the last one, contemplation on the Dharma. Contemplation on the Dharma is very complicated. It covers five important subjects. First one is contemplation on five hindrances. Second one, 12 ayatana, 12 bases. Number three, 7 factors of enlightenment. Number four, 5 aggregates. And number 5, the 4 noble truths. So today, owing to the constraint of the time, I will deal only the 4 noble truths, which is the essence of the teaching of the Buddha. As a Buddhist, we must understand thoroughly and comprehensively, thoroughly, the Four Noble Truths, which is categorized under Dhamma Nupassana Satipatthana. First, why Four Noble Truths so important? Because Venerable Sariputta said, in among all the animals, the footprint of elephant is the biggest. All the footprint of other animals can put inside the footprint of elephant, right? Similarly, among all the Dhamma, all the Dhammas, the Four Noble Truths is the greatest. All the Dhamma can put inside the Four Noble Truths. So if you can understand the Noble Truth, you understand the All. So what is the first Noble Truth? The truth of suffering. What's the truth of suffering? Five aggregate subject to clinging. Five aggregate subject to clinging are the truth of suffering. What are the five aggregates? Form aggregate. What is form aggregate? When the eye sees with sensually enticing sight, then the eye is on fire. When the ear sees sensually enticing sound, then the ear is on fire. When the nose smells the sensually enticing fragrance, like the smell from the opposite sex, then the nose is on fire. And when the taste touches, when the taste tasted the delicious food, then the taste, when the tongue tastes the delicious food, and the tongue is on fire. When the body touches the soft or opposite touch, then the body is on fire. The fire of lust, the fire of craving, the fire of greed. This is called the truth of suffering. The truth of suffering. And this only belongs to a form aggregate. So we have a feeling aggregate, a perception aggregate, formation aggregate, and consciousness aggregate. In short, this aggregate, same as mind and body. Same thing, mind and body. And we all have this five aggregate. And this five aggregate are subject to clinging as mind with craving, as myself with wrong view. And why the five aggregate or mind and body come about? Why we have this mind and body? Because of what? Craving. Because of craving. Craving for what? Craving for existence. Craving is the origin of suffering, the second noble truth. But craving for what? Craving for existence. Craving for life. I remember April, I went to China. China, I have a 7 days retreat there. One day, in the question and answer section, one student asked me a question. He said, when Arahant enter into Parinibbana, when Arahant dies, where he goes? Then this question is very difficult to answer. You've got to answer it very skillfully. So I give a simile. I say that when a wood or stick is burning, burning because dependent on the wood, then the stick is burning. So when the fire extinguishes, after that, where the fire goes? I question them. Where the fire goes? We cannot say the fire go to the eastern side, the fire go to the northern side, or the fire go to the western side. We cannot say like that. Then how should we answer? It just extinguish. Because the fuel has no more, so the fire just extinguished. It means that after Arahant died, there's no more. Then one of the students said that if it is so, he said, I want to go round the samsara again and again. That's much better for me. I don't want to become Arahant anymore. And another lady told me, when I go to again another sanjan, the lady told me that every day she practiced very hard, with the aim to become Arahant. And the same thing, they ask again, after that, where Arahant goes? I give the same answer. And this lady said that from today onward, I'm not going to strive so hard anymore. Arahant, after that, there's no more. Oh, sorry, I don't want. I want to come back again. This is called craving for existence. How this craving for existence so strongly embedded in us? I will give you another example. Let's say when you go outside, that go to the forest, on the way, you meet with a rotten animal corpse. Let's say a rotten pig or cow, goat or cow corpse, rotten. So when you see this rotten corpse, what is your reaction? What's your reaction? You will cover your nose and run away, right? Because it's so smelly, rotten one. Okay, but if there is a day when you go, you go to sea, then you drown. You drown. It's called drown. You almost die in the sea. Drown. Okay, you are drowned, and you almost die in the sea. At that moment, you are struggling for life. You almost die. And if at that moment there was a rotten corpse float and come close to you this time, what's your reaction? Will you react like previously, run away? Surely not. Then what's your reaction? You will grasp. Now, no more smelly. No more smelly. Why? Why your reaction so different? Because you crave for life. You want to survive. You don't want to die. You crave for life. This is called craving for existence. And this craving for existence is so strong. Therefore, we prefer slowly to gain liberation. We don't want to liberate so fast. Not yet enjoy enough. I better go around samsara again. Until one day I really awakened. Samsara is suffering, only then I want to become Arahant. You yourself know, right? Therefore it's very difficult for you to become nuns and monk. The life of monks and nuns is so boring. So boring. Every day, meditate, reading book, there's no enjoyment at all. That's not the life that most people like it. And this is called craving for sensual pleasures. So there are two types. Three types of craving. First, craving for existence. You understand already. Secondly, craving for sensual pleasures. This is also very, very strong craving that most people cannot renounce the world, cannot renounce the family, cannot renounce the business, and cannot renounce the world to become monk and nuns. And these two craving are strongly trap human being in a cycle of birth and death. Then what is the path? What is the path to end the craving? What is the path to get rid of all this craving? By seeing clearly. By seeing clearly the danger and the fault of the danger and the fault of existence. The existence is five aggregate, right? The existence of five aggregate, or another word, life. So we crave for sensual pleasures, we crave for life because we do not see through the danger and the fault of five aggregate. We do not see through the danger of life. We think life is pleasurable. We think life is enjoyable. Why we think life is enjoyable? Because of latent tendency, latent defilement of ignorant, avijja. Ignorant means blindness, blind, cannot see clearly. So the latent tendency of ignorant covered our wisdom. Just like the cloud cover the full moon. So we cannot see clearly. So when there's ignorant, it covers our wisdom, then the wisdom cannot see through the danger and the suffering of existence. Therefore, we practice, we meditate to develop this wisdom. We meditate to develop or to remove this ignorance, this avijja. We develop the wisdom to remove this ignorance so that we can see clearly the danger, the fault, and the suffering of existence. How? By seeing mind and body are impermanent. When you see the four elements keep on arising and passing away in the body again and again, then we start to see body as impermanent. It's not as stable as what we think it is. As long as we do not meditate, we will never be able to see the true nature of the body. Similarly, when we developed wisdom, then we start to see pleasant feeling is impermanent. Buddha said, whatever is felt is suffering. Is suffering, is suffering. Why is suffering? Because it changes. It changes. Pleasant feeling never stay long. Unpleasant feeling also never stay long. It keep on changing, changing. Whatever is impermanent, Buddha say, is suffering. And all this must be seen through development of the mind. It means development of meditation. And also, when we practice meditation, we start to see different state of mind are not a self. or craving state, a mind affected by craving, a mind affected by anger, a mind affected by happiness, a mind affected by sorrow, all are state of mind only, not a permanent self. If we identify suffering as self, as myself, as myself. When our life meet with suffering, and we identify it as myself, my suffering, my suffering, my suffering. How can you free from suffering? It's not possible. Because you grasp the suffering as myself, 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 you suffer even more. I remember last 2 years I was in USA. So I meditate. Every day I meditate 3 hours, every morning 3 hours. One day during the meditation, I feel so much suffering of mind and body. Then before 3 hours, I jump out from my cushion. I don't want to meditate anymore. Enough. There's endless suffering. Then second day, when I want to meditate the time, I remember the suffering. I don't want to meditate. So for a few days, I was stuck. Then one day, I suddenly I remember one saying from Venerable Sariputta. He said, "See suffering as suffering." I suddenly remember, why I suffer so much? Because I see suffering as my suffering. I identify suffering as myself. Therefore, I was caught in the net of self. I suffer because I'm holding a self. So the moment I understand, the moment I remember Venerable Sariputta say, see suffering as suffering, then I sit. When suffering arises, I see suffering as suffering. Then all the suffering ceases. So you can ask yourself, when you suffer, you ask yourself, where the suffering comes from? Ask yourself. Then you get an answer. Suffering comes from grasping. That is myself. That is a self. I am suffering. I am suffering. When you grasp in this way, then suffering will never leave you. You must see suffering as suffering. Only then you can free yourself from suffering. Therefore, only when we develop wisdom, we can see through. All mental states are just mental state, not a permanent self. So the path, the fourth noble truth. The fourth noble truth is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. What's the path? Usually we will answer the Noble Eightfold Path, right? And when we summarize the Noble Eightfold Path, we come to conclusion only three: morality, concentration, and wisdom. And if you can summarize these three again, then it is contemplation of impermanent, suffering, and non-self. In Sangyutta Nikaya, Buddha said, what is the path leading to the cessation of suffering? He said, right view towards impermanent, suffering, and non-self. Right thought towards impermanent, suffering, and non-self. And effort, try to know impermanent, suffering, and non-self is right effort. And right mindfulness is not forgetful. Don't forget impermanent, suffering, and non-self. Right concentration means focus your mind on impermanent, suffering, and non-self of mind and body. So when you experience these three characteristics, and gradually gradually you will become dispassionate. Previously, you love the mind and body so much because you think mind and body give you happiness. You think mind and body provides permanent. Mind and body are permanent. That is having a permanent self that you can control. But now, having practiced insight meditation, you see opposite. What you see previously come out differently. So now you start to understand, all are impermanent, all are suffering, all are non-self. Then you let go your passion. You let go your greed. You let go your attachment towards mind and body. Because now the ignorance that covers the truth nature of mind and body has been removed. Just like you remove the cloud, you see the full moon. The full moon shines, then you can see everything clearly. Then once you let go the attachment, once you let go the craving, then you attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the cessation of all suffering, the third noble truth. So, first noble truth is five aggregate subject to clinging. The second noble truth, craving for existence and craving for sensual pleasures. How to get rid of the craving? By contemplating impermanent, suffering and non-self. This is the noble truth. The path leading to the truth of suffering. And once your wisdom matured, then you develop the noble path, the stream entry path that understand these four noble truths and sees the Nibbana, the cessation of all suffering. So this is Dhamma Nupassana. So if we can keep our mind always in our own domain. What is our own domain? Contemplation on body, feeling, mind and Dhamma. All the time we can focus our mind into our own domain, our own resort, then the mind is protected. The mind is guarded, protected. Then the mind will not step into other people's domain. And we will not be like the monkey, caught by the hunter. This hunter is the evil one. And we are safe. Therefore, Buddha advised us, don't stray outside our own resort, but keep our mind into our own resort of body, feeling, mind and Dhamma. This is the end of the talk. If you always see death, then you can imagine yourself as a dead one, as a dead person. You replace yourself with the dead person, and see, soon I will be like that. Soon I will be like that, a dead one. And you, when you reflect in this way, very soon you will arouse a sense of urgency. If I like a dead person, how am I going to practice the Dharma? Right? I become useless. The body become useless like a rotten log. So if you can reflect in this way, I will be like him, dying, dead, lying there, dead, useless. Then you will have more effort to practice right now, not delay. Not say wait until I'm free. Not say wait until I retire. You will not have other excuses if you can contemplate the dead. So this is the way you can use that person to arouse the sense of urgency and practice the Dharma at every moment.
Question. Yes, Sally. What can we do so that we can continuously have awareness and mindfulness throughout the day, especially during conversation with people?
Especially during?
Conversations with other people.
Conversation with other people is to be mindful to when you are talking is very difficult. Just like me, after Dharma talk, I lost all my mindfulness. Although I try, but it just cannot. Even though I'm talking the Dharma, I still lost my mindfulness after talk. Not to speak when you are not talking the Dharma, you are talking something worldly things. So to develop mindfulness and mindfulness in your daily life, I think you need to practice some concentration. Because mind is very fast, and our mind, it has been long time our mind and indulge in sensual pleasures. So now you want to be mindful of our body, feeling, mental state, and Dharma is not easy because this is not the way we used to live. Unless you have certain degree of concentration by sitting quietly 1 or 2 hours every day to develop concentration. For example, Anapanasati, mindful of the breath, breathing in, breathing out. For 1 or 2 hours every day, daily. Then using that concentration thus accumulated, then your mind is become more quiet. When your mind become quiet, clear, serene, then whatever arises in you, either from the any sensation from the body, or any feeling, any mental state, or any Dharma, you are able to aware of it because your mind is clear, focused, clean, and bright enough. So long you do not cultivate concentration, sitting quiet on a cushion, and you just aim to practice Dharma in your daily life, to have mindfulness and wisdom, you can, but I think it will not be very fulfilling. Because lacking one important ingredient, that is concentration, to sustain your mindfulness. Therefore, I advise you to sit quietly 1 to 2 hours every day. You may think, oh, I don't have time. My business is so busy. I have wife, I have to entertain my wife, my husband, I have to feed my children. But don't forget, death will come anytime, any moment. You do not know. Just like when I go out, I may fall down from my staircase and meet with death. At a time, I cannot say, I have no time. You cannot say like that. Therefore, contemplation of that is also very helpful for you to have some time to practice meditation. If you don't contemplate the death, you always find excuses to say no time. I also no time. If I want to do Dhamma, I also no time to sit. But I understand death can come at any time, any moment. So no matter how busy am I have to spend at least 2 hours to sit on my cushion to develop concentration so that I can have power to sustain my mindfulness during my daily life. Okay.
Yes, and there are two questions from the same person. The first one, there are many meditation masters and methods, example Ajahn Brahm, Venerable Gaudi, several Ajahn Mia, several Pahal and Goenka, etc. Please advise how we can check which method can be more suitable for us to be liberated.
I think maybe you read my biography, I learned so many methods. I have learned so many methods, but until now, I do not see any method is 100% perfect. If I have learned one which is 100% perfect, I don't have to learn so many, right? Because each one has his good point. Then I take the good point of that one. For example, Pa'au has his good point, I take the good one. Ajahn Chah has his good point, I take the good one. Goenka has his good point, I take the good one. Then I combine all the good one. And all the good one become mine. And the most important, I study the sutta. I study the sutta, then I very carefully read the sutta and read the instruction from the Buddha. What are the main point? What are the way of the practice that can eradicate our defilements? Finally, for so many years studying and for so many times exposed to different methods, I come to one conclusion. The best method to me, the best method and the quickest method or the most shortcut. Nowadays, people emphasize on shortcut because no time, so shortcut is the best, is contemplation on impermanence. Whatever arises in the body, feeling, mind, Dhamma, you just contemplate it as impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. Of course, you need to have some concentration. You have to sit quietly on the cushion and develop some concentration. Then when you move around, you must have that mindfulness on impermanence. This is how I practice. And I can see it changed me very fast. After I became nun, for the first 10 years, I also practiced meditation, Mahasi Pa'au. But after 10 years, I still see myself as myself, never change. 10 years meditation, I do not see myself change. I do not change for the better. So I start to question, why like that? Having practiced for 10 years intensively, I do not see myself change for the better. So I question all the technique I have used before. Then I study the sutta. And finally, I know. If you study Samyutta Nikaya, Buddha often say, contemplate impermanent. Body is impermanent, feeling is impermanent, mind is impermanent. Dhamma is impermanent. He said, contemplate impermanent. Before that, I also read this one, but I cannot understand how to contemplate impermanent. This question passes me for a long, long time until my mind become mature. Then I read again, I got it. Just mentally contemplate impermanent. Then you synchronize your mental state with reality. Then the impermanent will reveal itself very fast. So if you ask me, I say all method has its own good point. But the most effective way is to contemplate impermanent. Sometimes contemplate non-self, sometimes contemplate cause and effect. Then within a short time, you will see yourself change for the better. Your craving become less, your attachment become less, your anger become less. Because everything is impermanent, why attach? This is how I practice.
Another question. Buddhists are afraid of karma, so some people feel that because of this, Buddhists do not dare to do things. What are your comments, please?
Buddhists dare not to do what?
Dare not do things. Dare not do anything.
Don't do anything, how to survive? You hold there, like sitting there, do not do anything. I afraid of karma, I don't do anything. You hold there, stand there, and how to survive? Cannot survive, right? You have to do something, but wholesome thing. As I said before, avoid evil. So you must make sure the things you do are not tainted with defilements. The thing you do are not unwholesome. Not to do anything is not possible because you live in this world. I also doing something. Now I'm doing my Dhamma talk. How can I not do anything, right? So now you must know. You have to do something, but you're afraid of karma, right? So you have to avoid doing bad things. You avoid doing all the bad things and avoid evil, doing good, and do all the good things. So the teaching of the Buddha is gradual training. So Buddha first teach what? Charity, generosity, dana, sharing what you have with others. This is called doing good things. Then secondly, keeping five precepts. Keep five precepts, not killing, not telling lies, not having sexual misconduct, not stealing, and not taking intoxicant that make your mind negligent. Then thirdly, then you start to practice meditation. So you must make sure you do all the good one. Although generosity and morality also are considered as karma, but they are good karma. This good karma are very important to support you in the cycle of rebirth. No doubt, this good karma extend your cycle of rebirth. But before we become arahant, we need the good karma to support us. If not, let's say in one life, you want to become monk, but you never do dana. Then when you become monk, no food to eat. Nobody offer you food. Then suffering, how to strive? Or you never offer rupes to monks. You want to become monk, then there's no rupes. No yellow rupes to wear. Then how to become monk? So before you come to true liberation from the samsara, you have to perform dana. Although dana extend the cycle of birth and death, but it's also very important to support your spiritual life. Similarly, morality. If you do not keep morality, then the life becomes even more miserable. And if you keep morality, when you come to spiritual practice, or you become monk and nun, your morality will support you to have good practice, to have less suffering, because less unwholesome vipaka, less unwholesome resultant will ripen. Without keeping the five precepts, then many unwholesome resultant will ripen, either in a human life or not to speak, in the unwholesome, unhappy destination. And when the life is full of unwholesome resultant, when the life is full of difficulty, then it's very difficult to strive for liberation as well, because the mind is very depressed. Therefore, we should not afraid of karma, but we should afraid of bad karma, and cultivate as much as possible good karma, so that before you become arahant, you can abide in, you can abide with ease in the cycle of samsara. Thank you.
Last question. Dear Venerable, is there a Buddhist way to use the four elements meditation to heal ourselves?
Say it again.
Is there a Buddhist way to use the four elements meditation to heal ourselves?
The purpose of four elements meditation is to see through. It's to see through the body as not a permanent self, but composed of four elements. This is the purpose. But it also has its good effect, not side effect. Good effect. When you practice four elements meditation, if you can scan from the top of the head, scan the four elements out down to the feet again and again, then it heals the body. It heals the body, because when you scan a time, you mentally focus on the four elements, which is wholesome thoughts, the good thoughts. The good thoughts produce good energy. Bad thought produce bad energy. So when you scan with four elements, it's wholesome thought. This wholesome thought produces the wholesome energy. Whenever your attention goes, it heals that part of the body. Because qi gong say, yi dao, qi dao. So this yi means your intention, your thought, good thought. The move throughout the body, then the good energy also follow the qi, follow your intention, move throughout the body. And this qi will kick away, will kick out all the bad energy in the body. So therefore, you achieve two purposes. When you practice four elements, you achieve the aim that body is not a self. So you remove the perception of self. Secondly, you achieve the good health. By using four elements, you heal your body and your body become healthy. But the main purpose is most important. So when you aim at the main purpose to remove the perception of self, but at the same time, you hit the good effect. The body become healthy. Okay.
That's all for the questions and answers tonight. So thank you, Sally, to see that question.